Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. John Townsend and Dr. Henry Cloud. And your phone calls today at 1-800-229-3000. We're glad you're with us here today for New Life.
Welcome to a classic program from the archives of New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. All of our calls for this classic program have already been taken, but if you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Now here's Steve.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend. You guys doing all right?
We're doing good, Steve. Good to see you.
You know,
hey, Stevie.
Hey, Henry. I was just thinking about what we teach and what we want people to do. And really,
it's about time we thought about that.
Yeah, but what we're trying to get people to is living the blessed life. You know, the blessed life is when tragedy is turned into triumph. When a person's down and they pick themselves up, or they allow God to pick themselves up and receive the blessings that are there. God wants to bless our lives. But sometimes we've learned how to kind of reject it or move the opposite direction. And it's just one of the great results of, or that we hope happen in people's lives, is that they live the blessed life.
I think you could, and I don't want to oversimplify, but I think you could almost boil it down to the reasons that we don't find the blessed life.
Okay.
Are one of these two, and what we do is we flip-flop the two. We're either not finding the blessed life because we do not depend. We don't become dependent like we were created to be, to depend on God and to depend on others and stop trying to do stuff that we can't do for ourselves.
Right? I'm with you on that one.
Or we don't do the things that we're supposed to be doing, and we're acting like God or other people should do those things. And what we do is we flip it and we become independent in the areas where we're supposed to be dependent, and we become dependent in the areas where we're supposed to be independent, and that is the unblessed life squared.
Beautiful. I mean, that really, if you're going to boil things down to two things, there it is. Life or death right there.
You know, it's funny. I mean, God, we know he's omnipotent. He could do anything. He created the universe. But he really will kind of respect that and not come in if he said, if you and I say, we don't want you, you know, we don't want manna anymore, he'll go, okay. Right. I'll knock on the door and I'll let you know later. And he lets us live with this. Or if we say it's all you and it was the woman you gave me, we don't get a blessing that way either.
That's right.
It kind of prohibits
well,
the blessing.
Think about this. God's going to bless me with a mate. I'm going to live a blessed life with the person God has chosen for me. So I don't ever go around people that are single. I don't ever get out of the house. I mean, you're going to say, well, hey, where's my blessed life? Well, it's like Henry says. You expected God to do everything. You didn't use your brain to say, now, wait a second.
Right.
I need to do what I can do, and then God's going to do what he'll do.
Think about the parable of the talents. To me, you know, everybody always talks about the parable of the talents, like, you know, in a great, you know, motivating way. Which it is. But to me, the parable of the talents is one of the scariest passages in all of the Bible. Because here you've got this guy that got less, right? And what did he do? Because of his fear, he protects himself.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly in the areas of our life where we have less ability or less, we protect ourselves. And then God gives us all this time to invest those areas and grow in those areas, and when we don't, he comes back and says, you know, you wicked and lazy servant.
Right.
But he's right, because the only way we're ever going to get his blessing is to dig it up and put it to use.
That's right.
And you gotta go to the groups and you gotta do this work.
You got to be a good stewardship of your talent.
Of your fears.
Of your fear, of your life, of your, well, if you want to experience the blessing. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back for more of New Life Live right after this.
God pulled me out of the gutter of my life that I was living in.
I have done a lot of work over the last 40 years. This is the first time I've ever felt loved.
I've had such a wonderful weekend here. I'm 2,000 miles from my house, and for the first time in a long time, I've felt at home.
And the Lord has set me free from my mother's story about me not being good enough.
The New Life Finding Freedom Workshop is coming to Orange County May 3rd to the 5th.
We're going
to
talk about forgiveness and codependency. We're going to understand that family of origin, the unhealthy reactions to it. We're going to talk about the cycle of shame and surrender and developing the plan that moves us forward. There'll be 8 teaching sessions and 6 small group sessions.
To register or to learn more about the Finding Freedom Workshop, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433 or online at newlife.com.
I am living a new life, and I believe that I have the resources and tools to continue that.
Welcome back to this classic program from the archives of New Life Live. If you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Henry Cloud, Dr. John Townsend, and your phone calls. Now let's go over here and talk with Steve from Columbia, South Carolina, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Hello, Steve.
Hello, how are y'all today?
We're doing great, thank you. It's always good when the three of us are together. We love that. So what can we do for you today?
It's kind of a difficult call because I guess I'm just confused about, well, I know that I have a sexual addiction. And I came to the Lord about 7-8 years ago. And for the first 4 or 5 years, it seemed like it was gone, but as anything, it seems to slowly creep back in, and I think it happened at such a young age, and I don't know, I mean, can you be saved and still have the addiction?
Well, you can certainly have an addiction and be saved. Many people have been saved, and they've fallen into addiction, and then they've reclaimed their life.
Steve, why would you ask that in the first place? Why aren't you assured that Jesus' death paid it for you?
Because I can't seem to stop doing what I'm doing. I thought that, I don't know, do you think?
Well, now, hold on. Now, let's just think this through, Steve. When you became a Christian, did God instantly put inside of you self-control, discipline,
maturity,
character,
healing?
You'd have to answer no to that.
Right.
And so
that's why it's called a new birth.
So
it's
It's a birth.
It's not a new adult.
Right. So you can live in the glow of the new birth for a while, but eventually the world comes seeping back in. And if you haven't done anything, you're not on that path, then you can just expect that all the things from pre-salvation are going to come back in, and Satan's going to use them to really mess your life up.
I mean, Steve, if you go to Romans 7, I mean, Paul, as a Christian, is saying,
yep,
I do things that I don't want to do. I don't do things that I do want to do. Who's going to rescue me from the body of this death? So you're in good company if you believe in Jesus and still have an addiction. I mean, those go hand in hand sometimes.
The bad case scenario is when you have an addiction and you have no Jesus.
Right.
Well, I need to find some steps to address this. And
there you go.
What led me to this, I heard a commercial where the guy said he saw something at an early age, and at that point he knew he was hooked. And there was a number that the all gave. I was not able to get that number.
Well, look,
because I was driving.
You've got the right number now.
I guess it's like anything. I can't do it on my own.
Yeah, you're exactly right. But let me ask a question. What you said was, you talked about this little timeline where you said you thought it was gone, and then you said it came back. Okay. Well, A, how did you make it gone to begin with? And did something change to make it, quote, unquote, come back?
Well, I guess that's a good question. Well, I thought it was gone because I just never really seemed like I was so wrapped up. I mean, I was growing in my Christian walk and doing well. I mean, people could see such a big change.
What were you doing? How did you make it gone? That's what I ask. What did you do that made, quote, it gone?
I guess spend more time with God.
All right. Was that all you did?
I guess for some reason I was with this new walk. It just never seemed to.
Okay, so but mainly you connected with God is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Okay. Now I'm glad you said this, and our heart goes out to you because many people think that that's the way out of an addiction. Now what's curious about this is that's not what God says. If you go to God and you turn to Him and you start beginning to read His ways that are outlined in the New Testament of how you overcome an addiction, first step is to turn to Him. That's what you've done. But then it says we begin to obey Him. And what He tells us to do when we turn to Him, He tells us to connect with other people that are going to give you the strength to be able to overcome this. He says to start digging up stuff inside, in that messy inside of the cup, and getting all of that junk out of there, the hurt and the, you know, the lust and the pain and the resentment, the injuries and the unforgiveness. And he tells us to learn new skills and begin to handle relationships in a way where we're not afraid of intimacy anymore, which is always driving some sort of lust. He tells us to get better connected so your heart is full. He tells you to begin to be able to do confrontations in relationship, which gets you out of a powerless situation. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on.
To forgive and go through a grief process and let things go.
Right, and in that grief process, that your pain should be seen by other people as you're weeping with those who weep mm-hmm. with you. Where you're weak, that you got a sponsor that comes along and encourages you. 1 Thessalonians 5 says, you know, several things in there. So my point is, God wants you to be able to overcome this. My heart goes out to you because you haven't had His program in place, and we can help you, you know, steer you to some places that can get that program working. But you've got good news here, buddy. All you got to have is the want to, and God provides all of these ways. You just got to get on a program that you didn't probably know was available.
I held out, it seems like, as long as I could. I don't know if that's a good way to put it, but people just don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, wait a second. Hold on. Before you go that path, so what are you willing to do now that you've heard Henry talk about the path? What are you willing to do?
I'm willing to take whatever step, that first step.
Okay.
That I need to find out more information about what a plan that I can put together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Help me achieve.
Well, you know what? The good news is, Steve, you don't have to put the plan together. Mm-hmm. This is the good news. God put the plan together. And what people in successful addiction recovery groups have been doing ever since is working His plan.
Yeah.
What you got to do is you know, I'll use the metaphor of the 12-step plan, for example. The last step of the 12 steps says that having received all of this, the spiritual awakening, understanding all this, I'm paraphrasing, we go and share it with others. And so when you go to Every Man's Battle, or you go to a 12-step group, or you go to a good, you know, therapist or treatment center, whoever, or recovery groups and churches, they already have the plan.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing this for years.
Yep.
You just got to forge yourself to it and stop trying to do it on your own, because none of us can do it on our own.
All right. I'm going to send you Every Man's Battle, and part of that plan is right in there. But if you're this willingness, or as you said, the want to, it's kind of the key to life. If you're unwilling, if you're not wanting.
And He's wanting. He's willing.
Sounds like it. All right. Okay, let's talk with Anna from Chicago, Illinois, and Anna is listening on WSNL. Hello, Anna. How are you?
I'm not doing so well.
What's going on?
This is a real hard call for me. Right now in my life, I feel hopeless. I feel lonelier than I've ever felt in my life. I feel depressed. I feel like I'm just a deadbeat in my children's eyes. Mm. Of course, I've always been a deadbeat according to my mother.
Mm.
My father never really cared about me. He still doesn't even talk to me.
Mm.
I call him and wish him a happy birthday, but I never hear from him.
Anna, was there some recent tipping point that caused it to get worse in some relationship recently?
Well, my whole life has been one big mess.
I know, but you're calling today.
I'm calling today because I go to Willow Creek Church. I was brought up Rush Orthodox, which is a really strict condemning religion.
Okay, let us get to a question that we could help you with. You're in a bad shape, bad place. People are seeing you as a deadbeat, and your mom's seen you that forever. How could we help you today?
Well, I went about 2 years ago. I went to Willow Creek Church because I had to get out of my church. It wasn't doing anything for me. I've been laid off since 2007. I have held a couple of jobs, but none of them lasted 6 months.
Okay.
I'm facing foreclosure.
Okay.
If it wasn't for Willow Creek, I wouldn't even make it through the month.
All right. We need to know how we could help you, though.
Well, recently, I think I let Willow Creek down, the people there, because I'm not getting any better. I feel like God has left me in exile.
Okay. So what's the question, then, that you had in your mind when you thought, I'm going to call them and talk with them?
Well, because
what was
every
the question?
Time I heard Dr. Cloud at Willow Creek and read his books, they gave me hope.
Good.
And I don't have that anymore. I feel like I disappointed everybody at Willow Creek.
Hold on a second, Anna. I want to ask you a question. Did someone tell you that you've disappointed them?
I could see it in their eyes.
No. Stop. Did someone tell you that
no.
I want that did somebody say, Anna, I want you to do A, B, and C, and you didn't do A, B, and C, and so they said, look, you're not doing what we ask you to do?
No, I'm doing what they asked me to do.
Okay, now hang on. I'm going to interrupt you again, because here's at least one thing I think that's happening. I think that you have a lot of kind of voices in your head, you know, thoughts in your head that keep putting you down and telling you how, you know, nobody will like you and you're undeserving and you're all these sorts of things. And that needs to be the focus of, you know, the work that you're doing, as well as all of this kind of life management stuff. And what I would do is, you know, I would talk to whoever is helping you there in the pastoral care department at Willow and say, you know what, I've become aware of another problem. I tend to not believe in myself, and I tend to get down on myself, and I think people aren't going to like me. And can you help me find a counselor or a group that could help me with the way this prison that I'm in inside of my head? Because you've worked on, like, sounds like life issues where you're getting help, but I think you need some of those kinds of people that come alongside and just help the criticism to stop. God hasn't made us to be able to live with getting, you know, criticism inside of our head all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's depressing and it's discouraging, and I would make that a new focus of help.
All right, I'm glad that you called, and I know that you're connected there to a great church, and I hope and pray that you'll do what Henry said. You called, get in contact with that pastoral care person. And, you know, so often we're our worst enemy. We can't pull ourselves back to where we need to be because we're condemning ourselves. We're the worst. We say stuff to ourselves we'd never say to a friend.
But you know what else is... You can always tell a healthy church like Willow Creek, because they know when the person's downcast, it's going to take some time. You know, 1 Thessalonians 5 says you need to encourage those who are falling or downcast. And so when somebody's in a bad place, a good church says, we're going to be with you for a season.
That's right.
You're going to do the steps, but you're not going to see the fruit for a while, and they're patient with you.
Yeah. All right, I hope that's helpful. And let's talk to Roger over here, Colorado Springs, Colorado, KGFT. Hello, Roger.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you?
Oh, I'm actually doing well.
Okay.
First of all, I want to let you guys know that I've been listening to your show now for a couple of years, and I'm off work right now, and so I've been listening to you guys almost every day. And I really appreciate what you guys do for everyone that calls in. It is a real blessing to me to hear people get back on a road to recovery.
Thank you.
So many different things.
We love doing this. We really do.
We can tell. Okay, my question is this.
Okay.
And it's nothing, you know, life-killing.
Okay.
Okay. I'm 66, and I cannot remember any of my childhood past probably 9-10 years old, earlier than that, rather.
Okay.
And I don't know why, just recently, in the past 6-7 months, it's become, I would say...
Okay, hold on. We'll go to a break, and we'll talk about those years.
My wife had found me out through my past and my sexual addiction since I was a small child. It really gave me the opportunity to start digging into my past, start digging into my childhood, figure out what was causing me to feel the way I was feeling. Every Man's Battle will really give you that opportunity, because all the guys there in that room are there for the exact same reason you're there. I don't want to be the reason that my kids are going to counseling. I don't want to be the reason that they begin to struggle with the same issues that I'm struggling with, and I've got to put an end to this. Yes, you can be different. God does love you. You can be forgiven for this, and there's a way out of this. But you have to acknowledge that you have to change, and that there's a problem.
If you're struggling, call us. There are people on the other end of the line who want to hear from you, who want to help you. We don't want you to hand down something to another generation that just looks like pain and destruction. You can hand down redemption. But you got to take that first step. Just give us a call. It's 1-800-639-5433. It's 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Last year, after Every Man's Battle, I was so moved by the transformation that I saw, not only in myself, but in the guys in our small group and the other people that were there and the stories that I heard, that I decided to go ahead and join Club New Life as a contributor to that.
You can help New Life Live stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
As you're doing God's work here, you're restoring marriages, you're giving people hope. It's just been such a blessing to me, and I just wanted to encourage you all. When you see something good that God's doing, just jump on that and help support that.
Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433.
Give your support to them if you can, and just help them do what God's doing here in the world.
Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today. We'd love to hear from you. You can write us at P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. We're talking with Roger, and Roger has been listening for a couple of years and realizes he can't remember anything before the age of 10. And your question about that, Roger, was?
Well, I'm just curious as if there's a problem with this, or, just, you know, I mean, whether it's just something that just kind of,
mm-hmm.
you know, goes along with certain people have this sort of thing, but it's just come up here recently that it's kind of been on my mind a lot.
Okay, so. All right. Well, there certainly was a phase when people, if you didn't remember childhood, oh, there must be something horrible that is there.
Yeah, it could be. Let me give you kind of a few, I don't know, sort of thoughts about it. One, Roger, is that. Neurologically, there's stuff we can't really understand or remember probably before like 3. I mean, just it's around that age and a little before that, it's just hard to even, you know, have a good videotape in your head. You're just formulating so much stuff. But, yeah, between that and 10, you should have some memories. And some, you know, there was, like Steve said, there was this big thing about could it be abuse? Could it be an unknown horrible thing that happened? And that's always possible, and you can check that out. But another one is some people are sort of like, kind of detached, and not have a hard time making emotional engagements, and they were either in their head a lot during those hours or during those years, or, you know, really busy and just never made an emotional connection. So they don't have a lot of memories because they sort of weren't there for them. And that's not an abuse issue or anything. That's sort of like a, I really wasn't engaged. But if it concerns you, I'd probably have a few sessions with a psychologist, because what's really important is today. I mean, the Bible says, you know, today's the big thing. And if it affects things like your growth and your relationships and your passions for life and where you want to go and your behavior, that's the big deal. If it's more of a curiosity, yeah, have a few sessions and see something pops up. Yeah,
are you having any cognitive problems in life now?
No.
No short-term memory loss, no confusion? Yeah.
No, none of that at all.
Stuff like that.
And it's just a matter of, you know, just here recently, and I have no idea why, it keeps kind of coming up, mm-hmm. you know, coming to mind.
Well, and I got a question for you, Roger. What was the tone and the nature and the feel of your childhood, as far back as you can remember? Was it warm and connected and loving?
Well, it was with my mother. Matter of fact, sister is 12 years older than I am, and my brother's 9 years older. So I was kind of, you know, an afterthought with my folks.
Yeah.
And my dad was never one to, I mean, not that he neglected or abused or anything that I know of anyway. He was never one to show emotion. And my mother was overly emotional.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was my brother and sister keep telling me how spoiled I was. And I don't remember that either. So, but it's just one of those things.
Do you tend to show up and go to work now?
Oh, yeah.
Well, then you must not have been too spoiled.
I'm not working at the moment. So.
Yeah. You know what? I don't hear a lot of problems. But
I don't think there are. Let
me give you a general. I'm going to give you a general belief to your general curiosity. Okay? Usually, when I hear somebody say that they just have amnesia, you know, under like 10 or yep. 9, like you said, the question always comes up in my head, probably, that, you know, there's some reason that your mind has kind of decided, you know, I just don't want to be aware of some of that. It wasn't conscious. And I'm not saying even that this is right, because there's other reasons as well. But it is normal for people to have memories, like John said, some memories kind of all the way back. A lot of times when it's blank, we just kind of ask why. So generally, if I were you and I cared about this, which, you know, I don't know why you have to care, but I think it'd be interesting, you know, to kind of like just sort of do some things that increase awareness. And as you know, people talk to siblings. People, like John said, they go talk to somebody.
What do you remember about my early years?
Yeah, and because the chances are that it can help you reconnect with parts of yourself that could enrich your emotional life, could enrich your capacity for empathy with others, a lot of different stuff. So that's a general belief that I have.
I had a guy in my coaching program do that, same kind of thing as you, Roger, and he said, you know, I've been like this workaholic professional all my life, and I've got 6 siblings, and I think stuff happened. So he systematically had a dinner with each one of his siblings. It took him about, I don't know, 6 months. They're all over the country. And it was mind-blowing. I'm really glad you said that.
And the growth that happened.
Happened. I mean, first off, the siblings would go, well, I was there. Don't you remember when? And things would happen inside like, oh, yeah. And that's why that was hard or painful or it was wonderful. But he came away closer to them, and it opened up his energy for the present, too. It was a really good exercise.
Right. And if you've got a mom and dad, that's always a good place to start. It may be a little distorted.
You know, my experience has been it's sometimes better with the siblings. Mm-hmm. Not always, but sometimes mom and dad have a stake in making sure the memories are the happy ones.
And but, some siblings too.
And some.
But you know, you can learn a lot when you say, Mom, what kind of baby was I? Mm-hmm. And she says, oh, you cried all the time. We couldn't get you to shut up. And, man, we're
glad you're on the earth.
We just lock you in your room there. And you know, kind of learn. Oh, well, so that's why I have a fear of doorknobs. Okay, I got it. Yeah. All right, we'll take
why
a break.
Why does the world look like a pantry? I see cans.
I want a home with no pantry. All right. Hey, somebody said, thank you for your ministry. I lead a small group and recently had a young man start coming. He realized after listening to New Life Live that he needs a support group, changing lives one day at a time. I've always said that if Jesus were here today, he would have a ministry like yours. Thank you for that. We love that. Thanks to all that support us and allow us to do this ministry.
Most of my life I've been dealing with an opiate addiction.
Why is opioid addiction quickly becoming one of our nation's biggest killers? Maybe it's because it isn't only those who are addicted who are in denial.
We did what I see so many parents do, is it can't be an addiction. There's something medically wrong.
It's impossible to solve a problem when you don't know what you're up against, and families will try to find any explanation except the one that will put them on the right path.
Alcoholism and drug addiction is a family disease. It doesn't affect just the individual.
If someone you love is abusing painkillers, know what you're up against. It's time to admit it's addiction and seek treatment. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We have Christ-centered partner treatment centers around the country. Call 1-800-639-5433 or visit us online at newlife.com.
We just made a decision. We will do whatever it takes.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, this is Steve Arterburn, and for 30 years, New Life has been the most trusted name in Christian counseling.
I'm an addict, and I'm trying to get God in my life again. You seem to be able to get to the crux of a problem quickly.
Our Christ-centered treatment programs can help you break free to embrace all that God has for you and your family.
I just want to thank you guys for bringing me to a relationship with Jesus.
There really is help for marital problems, depression, addictions, panic attacks, and feelings of hopelessness.
I came back with so many tools to help me prepare myself to fight this struggle and this battle that I have every day.
You can start living again today, living the life God intended for you. Help is available at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
They did care, and they did follow up very lovingly, and it made all the difference in my life.
Call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Someone who cares is waiting at the other end of the phone. God can open the door to a better tomorrow right now. Just call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. 1-800-639-5433.
Find out more information about New Life or any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to the program. This is Terry McIntosh, and I hope you're enjoying this classic program from the New Life Live archives. I want to take just a minute to tell you about Covenant Eyes. That's our partner in an internet filter for your computer. But it's more than just an internet filter. It's also an accountability tool that sends reports of your online activity on tablets, smartphones, and computers to individuals that you choose. You'll get your first 30 days free when you use the code NLM. Look for the Covenant Eyes link on the newlife.com website to get you started. Now let's get back to this classic program from the New Life Archives.
Let's go back to the calls. Talk to Rebecca from Philadelphia. She watches the program on FamilyNet. We're glad she does. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello.
How are you today?
Well, I'm thrilled to get in touch with you. I went to a Boundaries weekend that you did in, John did in Downingtown many years ago. My husband and I went, and it was a very good time for us.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay, so I have a situation that I don't think you've ever had a call for before.
All right. I cannot wait to hear this one.
You've listened to every call over the last 100 years.
If you have heard the calls, this is going to be... Let's have a drum roll for this.
I'll send you a Bible. If we agree, it's unique.
We've got to agree, Rebecca.
All right.
And
should we guess?
I cannot talk to anybody about.
Okay.
So you've chosen talk to 2 million
people. Only 2 million people. Your closest friends.
You can't talk to anybody. Let's just talk to the planet.
Anonymously. All right. Okay. I am a recovering pleaser.
Okay.
My husband is a chronic avoider.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a vacillator. Definitely sometimes a people pleaser.
Okay.
But this has to do with owning your own business. And I am a silent half-partner, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and...
what is a silent half-partner?
Well, you, I mean,
hold on
I'm
a second. Are you talking about with your husband or an outside business?
Well, no, this is his business, but the corporation, I'm half-owner, but I don't work at the business.
Okay.
Okay?
So what's the problem?
So,
Okay, Hold on a second. I hate to get technical about this, but when you say you're a half owner, are you not in a like a community property state where you both own the business together? You know, the couple owns this, or is there some technical reason why you've got this legal structure where you own stock but you have no voice?
You set up. So, the problem is the mingling or the reliance on our personal money when we go through these recessions, and we go through them quite often because his business is related to construction.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So,
so what is the question that you got?
Okay, the question
there?
Is, what do I do when he comes to me asking for me to sign loans? We've already gone through our savings so that we can make payroll to his employees.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done this for three different recessions, and we have substantial debt, and I'm the only one living in the reality that this is a recession. His employees, although he laid a few of them off early on, they have had no cuts in pay. They always get their paycheck. They get bonuses. They get vacations. They get, you know, company lunches dinners.
Hold on a second. I'm just going to interrupt you for a second, all right, before we get into the bigger picture. Let's just pretend that you wanted to make some loans, okay? Let's say that you want to finance this business. What any person would do who finances a business, they attach requirements to that loan. They say, we'll make this loan if you reduce your workforce to this, or if you get out of these divisions, or if you shut this down, or you have a loan-to-equity ratio, and there's covenants of balances, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody makes loans without first seeing, as Jesus said, you know, you wouldn't start a war if you don't have enough money to complete it. You've got to figure out what your requirements are for this. So if you're just writing checks without requirements, that's not even good loan practice, even if you were going to make the loan. The bigger issue here, I think, is that you guys have to look at this whole enterprise and ask yourself, what's sustainable and does it have hope or not? What I would suggest is go through necessary endings chapter by chapter together, because it's going to give you a formula of how to evaluate this. What has hope and what doesn't? And you're afraid of writing checks to something that's not sustainable.
The whole role question of wives being submissive and supportive, and, you know, it's his business. And
okay,
if I make a complaint, he takes it very personally, like I don't support him.
You can support someone and disagree with them.
I love you. I appreciate how hard you work. I cannot believe what you've gone through. But I'm just concerned about a couple of things. It's not personal. It's just a couple of things that I'm concerned about.
Yeah, Rebecca, you have a business problem that is the fruit of a marriage problem.
Right.
All right? And
right.
There's some kooky thinking about what the Bible says about submission. It's not true. But the real issue, I think, is that he reacts and it feels like a victim and feels like you don't love him and this sort of thing. And you being the recovering pleaser, you haven't recovered as much as I would like for you to. And so you're going to have some hard talks with him on a personal level and on a business level. And I think reading Henry's book will be a real good way to do this. But on that relational level, you've got to say, I need to know that when I see reality, if it's different than your reality, that I can speak it, and if we're truly partners, or if the only way you feel loved is if I always agree with you, because that's not a marriage I want. And you begin having that elephant out from under the rug in the relationship, and you start dialoguing about it, and what you'll probably find out that is he's got some insecurities and some triggers so that, you know, he feels wounded, and you guys work that out. And then you can be business partners together, but you got to get this family dynamic in the marriage dealt with.
My hunch is, you know, if he feels kind of victimized by you when you set limits with him, That's the flip side of that is what he may be doing in his business, where he's afraid to set limits with people because he projects onto all these employees, if he has structures and if he has requirements and this, that, and the other, that he's going to be hurting them so badly that he's not he may not be leading the business in a strong way, making hard calls.
Right.
So before you go the hard route and, you know, no, get underneath with him a little bit. Go through the book and get underneath that whole dynamic with him to help him. And you guys may end up feeling like lovers and partners and all those good things couples are supposed to do.
Okay, theological clarification. The Bible
Which
says...
Which is all we really do here.
The Bible says that she needs to submit to him, but it also says that he needs to be willing to lay down his agenda to hear her, and it says in another verse, submit yourselves one to another. There's the principle.
You've got that principle, and there's another principle too, which is that every passage in the Bible about relationships, a lot of those apply to marriage too, and we forget those. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's all these relationship passages about accept one another, speak the truth in love, you know, confront one another.
Yeah.
Oh, here's the marriage stuff over here. The other stuff doesn't apply. If it's a relationship and marriage is, then you have a responsibility to understand the submission thing you're talking about in Ephesians, plus the truthfulness, confrontation, you know, sowing and reaping stuff too. So apply all the relationship stuff in marriage to the Bible that you're doing to your marriage.
Your marriage is a
subset.
It's going
to be a lot healthier.
Marriage is a subset of all of the relationships.
Which one of you said something about roles and responsibilities?
Well, it must have been John.
Didn't I hear one of you say that? I think that one of the...
I've never said that on the show ever. Rebecca's right.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. I think one of the things that she's got to do, which brings up a bigger point of I think that all marriages ought to do in their financial lives, is to figure out what is your role and what is my role and what are the responsibilities that go with each role. A lot of marriages, one of the best structures I've ever heard, if there's like one income, then maybe if he's the one working, then his responsibility in his role is to bring the check in, and then they've done a budget together, and they figure out, you know, she's going to manage the household with this number that gets contributed, and then she's responsible for making that number work and staying in that budget. If it's two income earners that are doing that, they both contribute, they've got a budget, and each one has roles and responsibilities, and where you can have accountability to each other, and you're not getting in each other's yard, and you don't have all these control issues.
Right.
So if his role and responsibility in this is to be the CEO and the manager of that enterprise, then he's got a responsibility as well to be accountable to, if it's working or not working, to the stakeholders, in this case, which is the marriage.
One stakeholder there. I mean, two stakeholders.
Okay,
two stakeholders.
Rebecca, we have heard this problem before. We care about you. We haven't heard of it of somebody in that city in Philadelphia. But
we'll send her a life recovery Bible anyway.
The fourth caller.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to send her an Every Man's Bible to give to him.
There you go.
And so there's some really good stuff in there.
Because he might have a question we've never heard.
He might. He just might.
We'll prepay the winner.
Stump the boys. Ask a question never heard. We'll take a break. We'll come right back.
I came into this thinking that my husband was the cause of many of our issues.
The New Life Intimacy and Marriage Workshop is coming to Washington, D.C. June 28th to the 30th.
But after learning about our attachment styles, I understood how our past hurts were playing into our present problems.
Join Steve Arterburn.
It's been a dream of mine for a long time to help people to grow more intimately together, and we believe that everybody has room to grow in the intimacy level of their life.
And Mylon and Kay Yurkovich.
We help couples understand how their attachment style is sabotaging their current relationship, and then we teach them how to create comfort in a relationship.
To register to find out more, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or go to newlife.com.
Here at this workshop, we had our first ever conversation without yelling, blaming, and accusing.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Every time we try to talk, it just turns into a fight. I am so tired of arguing.
I don't understand. God, why did you take him from me?
I don't want my kids to think of me as the angry dad. Why can't I control my temper?
feel like he's more like my roommate than my husband. How did we become this distant?
I hate looking in the mirror. No matter what I try, nothing seems to work.
I just feel like my world is spinning out of control.
I feel so broken. Could God ever heal me?
Is it ever going to get better?
I feel like I'm drowning.
When will I learn to just breathe again?
It doesn't have to be this way. 48 hours can change your life. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
We're glad you joined us for this classic program from the archives of New Life Live. If you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to the program.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. John Townsend and Dr. Henry Cloud and your phone calls. And I want to talk with Ellen right here. Hello, Ellen from Columbus, Ohio, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Hi.
Hi there. How are you today?
Great. Thank you. What can we do for you today?
Well, I think I have your question that's never been asked of you guys before.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah. I'm going to try to condense this into a very small nutshell.
Now, wait a minute. There are stories we've never heard. Yeah. Give us a question we've never heard.
Oh, okay. Well, how do you live next door? I built a house next door to my mom almost 7 years ago. And she's never come to my house, never been in my house. And it's essentially, we have a relationship we talk just about every day.
Mm-hmm.
I believe she's schizophrenic. I moved home after 25 years of living in another state, and I always knew Mom had really serious issues, but I had no idea until I got next door.
Is she being treated for schizophrenia?
Has it been a diagnosis?
No. I had a counselor tell me that she sounded like a paranoid schizophrenic because I went into therapy. Just to be able to cope with living next door to Mom.
Tell us what her reason is for not coming in your house. What does she say is the reason for not visiting?
I believe she, when I moved home, she wanted me to take sides against my father, who she had a lot of bitterness at. He died a year ago. And wanted me to become her stick-to-be dad.
Yeah. So what is the question for us then?
Well, how do I find myself, sinking into depression pretty seriously,
mm-hmm.
and how do you have joy with a situation, right under your nose? I mean,
yeah.
I drive by
mm-hmm.
her house two or three times every day.
I'm
in her house every day.
Okay.
People have tragedy. People have sorrow. I don't have any kids.
Okay.
I don't
All
have
right.
a lot of,
I think we understand the situation.
Yep.
I've got an answer.
I got three answers.
Three answers. Let me just start because your answers will be better. But the first thing I would I would work through grieving the loss of the mother you always wanted and you don't have, and I would lower my expectations. The old saying, blood out of a turnip, you're really expecting her to give you something that maybe just is never going to be there. Now let's hear the real answer.
Well, actually, you cheated because that was kind of two of the three.
Two of the three? Okay. That's all
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
it's okay, Ellen. I'll wrap it up.
I think there's great wisdom in what Steve just said. Let's divide this up. You got a mother, apparently what you've been told is she has a mental illness. And there's nothing more frustrating than to live with untreated mental illness.
Yeah.
Okay, because you're trying to have a rational life with somebody. If she's schizophrenic, and we don't know that, but if you've been told that by a professional, there's at least stuff going on that probably needs treatment. So the first thing I would do right off of this call is to call a good geriatric psychiatrist and say, I got this mother, here's the symptoms, what can be done? What do we do? And that... You are trying to manage something that a family member just is not equipped to manage, A. B, what Steve was telling you was right. If this is depressing you, there's things that you need from her that she's not going to be able to provide, and you need to get plugged in where people support you and mother you, and you get, you know, all the things that mothers provide in good support systems and this, that, and the other. So you're really not needing or wanting anything from her. And then you'll be able to drive by and kind of pray for her and say, gosh, I'm sorry that mom's not doing well. I'll check on her. But you're not needing anything from her. And in, I think in those three things, you'll find some freedom.
The only thing I would add, Ellen, is there's a really good kind of technical term that sometimes helps clarify for people. It's called de-investment. De-investment means there's this turnip, and I want a blood out of it, and I'm literally pulling away my investment of need for the person to respect me, listen to me, ask how I'm doing, and come to my home. I'm pulling away my investment, and I'm putting it into other places. So you're de-investing from the need for your mom to be somebody she's not, and you're putting other places, and that's where joy comes from, really.
And that we're going to be
not have guilt over that too, because guilt plays a big part.
Well, because the guilt is remaining in the child position,
vis-a-vis
your mother. And we're asking you to come into the adult position where you don't need things from her. So if you don't need things from her, then approval and forgiveness is something that you don't need, because you're an adult figuring out what's right for you under God. But I hate to disappoint you that telling you we've had this question before. In fact, so much. We wrote a book on it. It's called The Mom Factor, Dealing with the Mother You Had, Didn't Have, or Still Contend With, and we'll send you the book.
Hey, you know, another thing like de-investing is repositioning pity. You could say, oh, how pitiful. My mom has never come over to my house. I feel horrible. I deserve this. So you're pitying yourself versus pity her. Mm-hmm. Pity her that she either doesn't know or isn't aware or can't or whatever. And you put the pity where it needs to be.
You point the pity.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, mom sort of doesn't have a lot of freedom in her life, and that's not good.
It's pitiful.
You feel bad for her.
Yeah. All right.
I know some people that are glad their moms never come to their house, but that's a different show.
I know some people, the last thing they do is build a house next to mama. Oh, boy.
There are a lot of different ways.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time, and we love getting to do this. And the only way we do is that people support us. Club New Life is so very important to us in maintaining the daily expense that we have from media and other things. $30 a month. I mean, it goes a long way. And we'll send you four amazing videos by Mylon and Kay. One of them alone, it's just our way of saying thank you, but this one video, 12 questions that will change any relationship. And you know, most relationships, they need a change. And so there are other videos on how we relate to our adult children, how anger plays a part in whatever we're doing, relating to somebody else, and then just how do you talk with your kids about sex. They're so good. And they're our way of saying thank you for joining Club New Life. Would you please consider, don't just consider, pick up the phone and call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, we're not just interested in you supporting us. We have counselors all over this country that would help you if you'd call us. And people are always saying, do you think I need counseling? That's not the question. The question is, would I benefit from it? I go every week because I know I benefit from it. And I just don't want to ever stop. I don't think my wife would let me. So it's just something that is a benefit to our relationship. So you call us. Maybe it's a workshop you need. Maybe it's a counselor. Maybe it's a book. You know, in the Arterburn series, all of those books are on the other person in the relationship that might have a problem that you need to understand. We've got a resource for you. You call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you need some help. Now, let me tell you about the workshops that we're doing. Every Man's Battle is on April the 5th. That's in Philadelphia. And our New Life Weekend, Finding Freedom, we did the first one, and this one's going to be even better. People love that first one, Finding Freedom, May the 3rd. It's the New Life Weekend, and if you've never been to a New Life Weekend, this is the place to start. Intimacy in Marriage is June the 28th, and we just did the most powerful one we've ever done. And Restore Hope for a Woman's Heart, July the 19th. I
I feel so badly for women that could go to this and you don't, because there's so much bonding and so much great stuff to help you and your own recovery.
We will we'll see you next time here on New Life Live. My thanks to Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend, and to all of you that listen or watch. God bless you. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again on Monday for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.